has actions now that must be sung. I can't say it. It's a sort of an affirmation of the present. And we no longer can sing the old feudal songs, he says. And for that reason, you know, in time he'll attack Shakespeare. But now look at here. Listen, Whitman. It's almost the same, almost paraphrased. America does not deny the past or what the past has produced under its forms or amid other politics or the idea of castes or the old religions. You see, it doesn't deny those, while the life which serves its requirements has passed into the new life with a new form, you see. That it is action has descended now, the old action has descended now to the stalwart and well-shaped heir who approaches. Now the Americans of all nations at any time upon the earth, see, he's waving the flag, isn't he?
That's the first time.
Have probably the fullest poetical nature.
I have to go there.
And by universal consent, they had no poetry in their nature. Now they did have, though. And
they hadn't even been up.
The United States himself. Essentially a great poet. In the history of the earth hitherto, the largest and most stirring appear tame and orderly to their ampler largeness and stir in these states. Now, that's not an affirmation. I never heard it. Now, what do you do when you read this? How does it affect you? I mean, do you take it seriously? Well, I think it's marvelous. Here, at last, is something in the doings of man that corresponds with the broadest doings of the day and night. Here is action, untied from string, necessarily blind to particulars and details, magnificently moving in masses. Now look at the common man. We just have a minute. Let me see. Let me see if I can... The common people have the largest of the nation. See, now if the nation is large, the common man must be large too. An American poet, he must sing what Whitman calls the great psalm of the Republic. And he thinks there's, from the poet's point of view, of the indescribable freshness and unconsciousness of an illiterate person. Now, I have to stand up here and sort of go through these things. But what I'd like to do is to hear your comments on these. That suits me more than anything else. Does that strike you as anything unusual? The freshness and unconsciousness of the literate person. Now look at what happens. The Canadian woodchopper has that unconsciousness and is deliberate. And look what Thoreau does to him. But you see, Thoreau just has a mere glimpse compared to what Emerson had. You see, in Whitman, it has gone to the point that he is underwriting the whole scheme of American democracy. And he is saying that American democracy cannot exist without him. That is to say, without the poet. Who will sing what he's talking about and put it in a poem. Now that's going, that's moving fast, isn't it? Does that work out? The poet cheers like Emerson's scholar. He does not degrade. Now it could be that implicit, you see, as you get into it, all along, you see, if you get your mind full of this, these little illuminations come to you. What does Emerson say is the function of the scholar? The first one, to cheer, what is it? To elevate and to lead men between appearances and the truth. I forget it. To cheer. So that when he says here he does not degrade men, it may be he can't go around degrading him by telling how evil the man is. That may be a part of it. I see, I thought of that then, but I'm not interested in what I think. I want to hear you talk about these things. And we just get involved in our little university terms, you see. Looks like always get in a hurry. I want you to get through this, and you see, I feel like you won't do it. You can't do it by yourself. You see, I run you down all the time. Just to myself, I say, well, I've got to explain this to them. They won't understand this. You see, that's not right. Once you get just a little toehold, that's all you need. And if you're left alone, I think, you see, and we talk so much. Beauty, you see? Now, what is beauty? Beauty is something that belongs to outdoor people. Now, you can live this, you see. You can extend this into articles of faith, which will free you from no telling how much foolishness. Just that one little point. Now, that's beauty. Isn't that something? Well, you see, I sort of speak to you. I guess it's sort of discouraging to you, as if I know it all. I don't know it all at all. I hope you certainly never think that I know it all. Let me tell you all I know. I know when you're not on the track. Now that's about all I know. And I can help you get on the track. But you leave me, you see, that's what I say. I can't. You can go faster than I can. You can go farther than I can. Even Whitman. That's all I'm interested in. Just get you on the track. Whitman's very difficult. You know what you do? If I wasn't in here, you know what you do? You'd just be swapping out, just be contradicting each other, and you say he's just an old windbag. Yeah. A lot of people say condescend towards the road because he acts like Chanticleer and crows. If for no other purpose to wake up his neighbors. And they say that he doesn't have that quality of togetherness. And what we do is flatten people to our own. Now that's, I'll see you next time. Wait a minute, what are you going to read next time? We're going to read a song of myself. Now let me tell you one thing. If you want to see a man mad, just hopping mad, and if you want to see him cuss, you read that Democratic Vistas. Just read it. I'll tell you what you do. Read it out loud, and it'll get into your voice, and pretty soon you'll just be talking worse than I'm doing here. You get that? You got it, haven't you? Democratic Vistas. And I'll see you on Friday. I'll be glad if you take
it. I don't know, I guess.
Now that's the end of Wednesday, the 21st of February. That's the end of Wednesday, the 21st of February. At the end of it, the batteries got weak. And then when I recharged them, they made it go too fast along there. The batteries got weak, and then when I recharged them, it made the voice go too fast along there, so it doesn't sound natural. I don't know whether I'll have trouble with the batteries on this Friday, the 23rd of February.
I seem to waste a good deal of time. I don't do as much work, just actual work, paperwork, as I need to do. For instance, I started working on those and picking out passages. Then I had to do something else, and I didn't get enough done. Now, if I let it wait too long, you see, it'll get cold in my mind, and I can't do it. Do you ever have things like that happen to you? My friend over where you have tape recorders, those things. What do you call that department? Video department, teacher resources or something. Said he has a little mixer where I can use two or three microphones, and they'll all go into this one little machine. And that's what I've been trying to get. Now, if I'd known the name of it, see, I could have asked for it. A mixer.
And it takes a little battery in there to give it a little extra power. Not much, just a little bit. Now what I can do is, now you see, just the system that I've been using here, I can see where I have missed out a good bit. See, you don't tell me much, not much. I have to sort of work by instinct and, I think where what hurts me the most is when you don't keep up with the reading. I think you borrow from Peter to pay Paul too much. And when I give you pretty moderate reading assignments as a basic assignment, then you are supposed to go ahead and read more when you have time. Unless you do that, you see, you don't go along with the feeling of the class. And you see my attitude a little different from some of your other instructors. I can't carry the class. You see, what I say doesn't affect you much, actually. It's what you read from these writers. Let me tell you, I want to check with you now on 1855. Is one of the fine documents. It's not fine writing, you understand that. Whitman never learned how to write, that's fortunate. But somehow or other he can get things into his writing, his words, you see, for those who can read. But now, in Whitman there's this great difficulty. It takes a scholar to read Whitman. And I've never seen an inexperienced writer get into Whitman by himself. Now, I'm scholar enough to get you into Whitman. And after that, you see, you are all right. Once you get into it. But I told you before. You see, I've heard no end of students. I've seen this again and again. You see, they say, well, I'm going to do some reading. I don't want to go through life ignorant. And they get out a little of Whitman and a little Moby Dick and those things, even when they're 15, 16 years old, young. Now, in Moby Dick, you see, they can read through that first part, the sea story, so to speak. Where he talks about the harpooners and the eating clam chowder. They can get through that. But already in the first 100 pages, they raise the question in their mind, what is great literature about this? And that's what they're reading it for, is to see what's great about it. And you see, they don't know greatness when they see it. Because what he's doing, you see, his whole objective there is to see greatness in the common. And that's a paradox they're not prepared for and can't see by themselves. So they let it go. Or else see it in the movie. You don't get Moby Dick in a movie. It can't be done. I've never seen greatness transferred into another medium. Now you can get the plot. You see, now I'm going to move along pretty fast with you in just a minute. But you know, this irks me. This gets me. So many people, even students who've been through literature classes, some of the best literature classes, still read for the plot. Once a person, you see, gets into the book, he's almost bound to sort of feel the need to spread the light. As one of the such a great multitude of sources of error and misconception. And I see that so much, you know, I seem to be conscious of it so much. That people who are beautiful or handsome and healthy, their minds are perfect blanks and are misdirected. And if they voted for the President of the United States, I would hate to see what their vote was based on. Now that's what I'm thinking about, you see, when I talk to you about Whitman and these other writers, you see. Once you get into them, you see, you'll never be the same again. Now look, let's move right fast on the preface 1855. You see, you saw the passage there where he says the poet cheers, you see, like Emerson Scala. You see that passage? The power to destroy or remold. And he just talked about the indescribable freshness and unconsciousness of an illiterate person. That must have sounded awful at the time. Nobody had heard such statements as that. The great incomparable freshness of the illiterate person. There is not left any vestige of despair or misanthropy or cunning or exclusiveness or the ignominy of a nativity of color or delusion of hell or necessity of hell. And no man thenceforward shall be degraded for ignorance or weakness or sin. Now that's his pronouncement. Then the next paragraph, you see, he talks about beauty. Dumb, real objects, you see, have beauty. And all is an old varied sign of the unfailing perception of beauty and of the residence of the poetic in the outdoor people. Now that's one of his signs, you see. He can see it so well in the outdoor people. And I must say to you, I have never learned to see it in indoor people. I never have. And I don't know whether America, as fast as America has changed, has quite ever learned to live with itself since it has gone indoors. As much as it has. Now, you see, I'm not expressing my opinion. I mean, this is one of the large questions. You see, you can't ever come to any decision on it. You see, going indoors has an effect that is inevitable, and there's no end to it and no answer to it. But it's a question that's always in the mind. And with all these illuminations, I can see much better, you see, without any light at all in here. But it makes you nervous. You can sense you're used to the illumination. See, at home, I don't have any. I just get close to the window and use just ordinary light like this. Now, you see, I do that because I've read Whitman. So that makes, that has bad effect on me, doesn't it? Another reason I do it, I've had eye trouble for a long time. My eyes are sensitive to light. Now, the art of art, the glory of expression, the sunshine of the light of letters, I'm just getting to the next paragraph, is simplicity. Now, look at all he says there. The great poet has less than marked style and is more the channel of thoughts and things without increase and diminution, and is a free channel of himself. Now, he's talking there, you see, about simplicity. And it's creative, and the great poet is the channel. You see, that looks like things all mixed up. I'd much rather hear what you say about that.
I'm sort of party-ish.
Walks at his ease. Now that's your common person. It's also a heroic person. Walks was at his knees. That's a paragraph, the old red blood. Of the traits of the brotherhood of first-class writers, savants, musicians, inventors, artists, nothing is finer than silent defiance advancing from new free forms. The messages of great poems to each man and woman are, come to us on equal terms. Yes, but you can't quite do that. Soundest organic health, large hope and compassion, fondness for women and children, large elements, good constitution, and all those things. You see, it has been thought that the prudent citizen was the citizen who applied him to solid gains and did well for himself and for his family, and completed a lawful life without debt or crime. Now you see, now that's poor Richard. You see, he's returning to that. The greatest poet sees and admits these economies as he sees the economies of food and sleep, but has higher notions of prudence than to think he gives much when he gives a few slight attentions to the latch of the gate. Now here's this is comment on Paul Richard. Now I think we'll read this for a greater now whether or not he understands Paul Richard. He does. He's brought up on beyond the infinite. Now here's his view of it. Beyond the infinite of a little sum laid aside for burial money, and of a few clappers around and shingles overhead on a lot of American soil owned, and the easy dollars that supply the year's plain clothing and meals. The melancholy prudence of the abandonment of such a great being as a man is to the toss and pallor of years of money making. With all their scorching days and icy nights. Now that's almost a sort of a fringe sort of existence he's talking about. Just a bad existence is all he's interested in. Just a little shingles ahead above and clapboards around. As we've said, you know, so many obstructions to being seen and healthy. You know, sometimes I think the unhealthiest place in the world is the university. They force you into cluttering your mind and numbing your nerves. And your mind never the same again, you know, after you do that. Your nerves never are. Like that bent string, you see, it's stretched and it never comes back again. Thing in Whitman is he resists that. He resists it. or the earth. You see, universe is fine places if you don't qualify for a degree. You just come in and take a course, you're fine. You're fine. People are human. And you feel healthy. But just once put your name on the books. And from then on out, look what it does to you. Now you say, that's me, that's not Whitman. Now, maybe that's so. But just an extension of what he's saying here, of prudence. Now you see, I don't like to say those things really. You think I do, but I don't. I like for you to say, see what you say about them, you know. And that's really all that matters, is what you say about them. Now what would you say the preface 1855 is about, just in a word or two? Could you line it out? And you see, in the next paragraph, ever the right explanation remains to be made about prudence, the prudence of mere wealth and respectability and all. And then the next paragraph, look, he turns fast from prudence to this. The direct trial of him who would be the greatest poet is today. If he does not flood himself with immediate age. Now let me tell you. I'll ask on this side, because no, you don't bait me over here. What is it now? Let me tell you. What does that have to do? What light does that shed on what Hester did those 7 years in her cottage? Now just read that, you see. If he does not flood himself with immediate age, as with vast oceanic tides. Now you told me one thing. Now you say Hester, is this pale flower that bloomed in too retired a cage. That's what Hawthorne said about himself. And his flowers, his people that came to life in his stories were also pale, because he himself had grown up in too retired a shade. You see, that's in the Mosses from the Old Manse, where he represents himself as having been brought up in this fine old Puritan settlement of generations of scholars behind him and divines. But they had actually lost their grip on the world. Now, that's the last time, as far as I know, a writer represented himself. They stay out of it after that. Hawthorne misled people so much. Now look, there are no pale flowers in this. Now you look, what does Dimmesdale do, you see, after that meeting in the woods? Now you know that scene? But he returns and wants to flip the nose of his passions. That's not a pale flower. Now, as you look back to that first scene where Hester comes out of the jail, that doesn't look the same as it did. Because, you know, she is seething with indignation, or what is the word you'd say? With what? Defiance. I'm not sure what the word is, but she's full of it, isn't she? And she is large and a picture of vigor, you see. Please, ma'am. Good question, but I'm you for raising it. Don't you know the difference between a plot and the meat of the story? An author's got to have some sort of little old plot, but if you hold him just to the plot, you never get anywhere. You sing in terms of the plot. Now come again. I think so. I think in a way that defeats his whole purpose. That nullifies his effort. Most readers. And that's possible, you know. You know what I was reading about the dictionary last night? Dwight MacDonald wrote this marvelous article for the New Yorker. It's been several years. And he unseats the whole profession of the lexicographers who's basing their dictionaries on permissiveness. And that one little article, he unseats them. So these are there can be so much in that. I don't know. I don't know. That's a difficulty. And I see we brought that up before. I don't know how to get around this. Talk some more. Cool story. You also read the Custom House. You see, it's part of the novel, and don't see the difference. You see, one is that Custom House thing is sour. It's a discontented office seeker where he's just sour grapes. And see, you read that as a part of the scholar, and there's nothing akin at all. See? And you read it without noticing it. You say it's Hawthorne wrote it, it's pretty good. Now, let me tell you, I didn't mean to be sharp. Let me read a few. Let me read a few of those poems and songs myself. This thing that hit the world, and this is what people knew about women. And if you can think of anything worse, if he could survive the song of myself, or even this first verse, you see, he's fine. I celebrate myself and sing myself, and he's already an egregious fool. Now, that's the language of poetry, yes. Now, look here. In that first line, when he says, I celebrate myself, what does he mean? All of this we're talking about is in that he's thinking about himself as a common man. He's a commoner. That's all he ever thinks of himself as. And that's the I. And what I shall assume, you shall assume. Now, you see how he just pass away all public opinion, all those things. For every atom belongs to me as good as belongs to you. I loaf, now look at here. I loaf and invite my soul. I lean and loaf at my ease, observing a spear of summer grass. Now in your state of nerves, you can't read that, you see. Oh, it's just words to you. Same shape, you see. Now that's a picture. You know, if you kept this in your mind, you could read Mark Twain. Or you could also read Whitman. Just this one little line. I loaf and invite my soul. I lean and loaf at my ease, observing a spear of summer grass. My tongue, every atom of my blood, formed from this soil, this air, born here at parents, born here from parents the same, and that parent the same. And if that's poetry, I just declare, I hate to think about it. If that's English, well, that's not even English, you see. Born here, parents born here, from parents the same. Why, some immigrant, you see, would speak better English than that. I now, 37 years old, and perfect health begin. Well, I'd say that he's a little late learner, you know. He's starting late in life. What is it, Joe? In schools and events, retiring back a while, suffices what they are, but never forgotten. See, what do you mean, creeds and schools and events? All the creeds of the churches and the schools and all the universities in abeyance, what they say is all right, but I'm not going to bother with it. I harbor for good or bad. I permit to speak without hazard, nature without check, with original energy. Isn't that something? Now look, that's his, you might say, his declaration. Now here's one of his first applications. Houses and rooms are full of perfume. Now you know what he's going to say? You ought to know already what he's going to say. What's his response to houses that are full of perfume? That's right. The shelves are crowded with perfumes. I breathe the fragrance myself and know it, and I like it. The distillation would intoxicate me also, but I shall not let it. The atmosphere, I see, it's not a perfume. It's got no taste. Now the distillation is odorless. It is for my mouth forever. I am in love with it, the atmosphere. And you know, just one small thing like that, I don't know, it just changes. Man, when you think that the atmosphere is no longer clean, and it's hard to do that. And you see out in the country all around me, you see they're burning rubbish, and the wind blows it over me, and I have to smell it. And you see, we turn ourselves into little furnaces, just polluting the air wherever we go. Just polluting it. Deliberately polluted. I don't know how to read Whitman. I just hated to read or teach Wordsworth. Wordsworth, you see, never went indoors. He's always on those long roads. Big feet, long legs. He couldn't sing it. Put him into the poems like Whitman. And after class, you see, we'd come out here on this veranda and just light up. Now, how are you going to read Wordsworth? Or Whitman? I don't know. Let's see. See how nerves are tense. Air. Smoke of my own breath. Echoes, ripples, buzz, whispers, love roots, silk thread. Now, you see, there's that fine list. I don't believe I'll tackle that. Now look at three. I have heard what the talkers are talking. Now let me tell you. Is he praising them there? I have heard what the talkers are talking. What do you think he's going to say? Say it. Trivial talk, but I do not talk. They talk about the beginning and the end. Now, people used to do that. That's one of the subjects. In Sunday school, they used to talk about the beginning and the end, you know, as if anybody knew. You talk about Genesis and Revelation. Well, neither one of them knows. You see, that's just a misapplication of mentality to even think that anybody knows or ever will know anything of the sort. And that's what he's saying here. Now, I'm not saying that myself. I'm just saying what he says. There was never any more inception than there is now. You see, we always throw off on the present, don't we? I'm on the word. No any more youth or age than there is now. That's a healthy sort of thing. And then he sees it in biological terms. Urge and urge and urge, always the procreate urge of the world. But that's mighty poor. And then four, he starts off the same way. Trippers and askers surround me. People I meet, the effect upon me of my early life, of the war in the city, the latest dates, the dinner, and see, all those things affect me. Backward I see in my own days where I sweated through fog and language and contenders. I have no mockings or arguments. I witness and wait. See, he sees so much lost effort in the past. Let me check with you number six. That's a little more interesting. Now this is the first one which he really takes hold of. Now you say it. You see, a child said, "What is the grass?" Fetching it to me with full hands. How could I answer the child? I don't know what it is any more than he does. But now here are his suppositions. I guess it must be the flag of my disposition, out of hopeful green stuff woven. I don't know if that's Whitman or not. You think it might be? Maybe in one side of it. Oh, I guess it's a handkerchief of the Lord. A scented gift and remembrance of designedly drops. You know the story behind this? You see, one way in the old days where the boys and girls didn't associate was if they wanted to get acquainted, you see, the girl would drop her handkerchief somewhere and the boy would find it and take it to her. Now that's one of the fine old fictions. That's what he puts into here for another purpose. Or I guess it is a handkerchief of the Lord. A scented gift and remembrance, designedly dropped, bearing the owner's name somewhere in the corner, that we may see and remark and say, whose is it? Now that's the grass. Oh, I guess it is a uniform hieroglyphic, and it means sprouting alike in broad zones and narrow zones, growing among black folks as among white folks, Canuck, Tuckahoe, Congressman Cuff. I give them the same, I receive them the same. Now, how you interpret that? That's the grass. Yes. Just pure common people, you see. And now it seems to me the beautiful uncut half graves. Tenderly will I use you, curling grass. It may be you transpire from the breasts of young men. It may be if I had known them, I would have loved them. It may be you are from old people or from offspring taken soon out of their mother's laps. And here you are. This grass is very dark to be from the white heads of old mothers, darker than the colorless beards of old men. Oh, I perceive, after all, so many uttering tongues, and I perceive they do not come from the roofs of mouths for nothing. And then, you see, he finishes there alive and well somewhere. The smallest sprout shows there's really no death. Now, that's also, you see, in the grass. I take that last part to be about the same. Let me show you one thing that annoyed people at the time. Say in stanza 11 or section 11, 28 young men bathe on the shore, and 28 young men and all so friendly, and 28 years of womanhood life and also so lonesome. She owns a fine house at the right of the bank. Now I think this is the one where the girl watches the 28 young men in swimming naked. And what he's doing, writers sometimes have very little judgment. They just miss the spirit move them, you see, and they've got all sorts of banalities and indiscretions. And you've got some huge ones in Whitman. And you see, he not only takes the body as he celebrates the body in this, rightly, but then you see, he takes the body into such a into such curious ways. Now you can see that. I wanted to point out to you. Let me find it.
This is the end of the Friday session. I couldn't find the material I wanted to show him. I brought the wrong book to class. I had that little paperback of Whitman, and the song of myself was incomplete in it, and I don't have it marked anyhow. So that's where I pick up on Monday. I have the Monday one, and I'll record it when I get back from town or transfer it. Now I'm getting ready to transfer the tape I seem to have misplaced. I just couldn't find it. This is Monday, the 26th. That's Monday of this week, 26th of February. Now, this is Wednesday when I'm talking, and I gave a quiz today, and I don't have anything to record. Just scattered marks about the turn of the screw. But now this, on Monday, I hastened through Song of Myself and Democratic Vistas, and I just want to see how they go.
The number six is the one we went into and some failed last time. Now in eight, I didn't mean four through eight, I mean four and eight. Now look in particular at number eight. All these things I see. I see all these appearances, he says. Appearances. Now that's a philosophic term. That is daily happenings. But he says, I am not contained by them. Now, you see, that's at the very end. I mind them, or the show, or resonance of them, I come and depart. Now, you see, he is a part of all those things, but they do not contain him. Now, you see, that's keeping himself apart. Now, this is one I was looking for last time. I brought the wrong book. This little old book doesn't have enough of it in there. In 9, 10, and 11, he has all these scenes, little bitty scenes that he calls up. The big doors of the country barn stand open and ready, the haying scene. And in 10, alone, far in the wilds and mountains I hunt. And the idea is not expressed. Sometimes he doesn't express the idea. Or he expresses it in a tenuous way. And in this one, he gives a very broad statement of it in line 230 thereabout. In me, the caresser of life, wherever moving, backward as well as forward going, absorbing all to myself and for this song. Now, you see, that's the idea that contains all these scenes. And the reader has to hold a long time, you see, before he gets to the sort. Now, that makes Whitman inaccessible to almost every reader. I think a reader has to have a scholar's introduction to Whitman. Now, I'm not referring to myself as a scholar. You see, I have worked with a number of scholars on Whitman, so I naturally have some knowledge of him. Now, that's what you run into. But you see, after you get it, it's worth getting. And what he does, you see, is make these little discussion papers that are the staple of the university community. By little abstractions are tossed back and forth, he puts those, you see, in a rather negative light. Now, in your papers, I try to get away from that and let you write like Whitman. In 15, look at that. You see, in Specimen Days, you saw him at the theater and the opera. And look at all these things that are in his mind. The pure contralto sings in the organ loft. The carpenter dresses his plank. And you see Franklin's in his trades. And Thoreau, you see, has as many trades as he has fingers. And Whitman is interested in all of those things. And they're very clear in his mind. Now, I'm giving you these things so you can set down a little comment, and it will help you go through them. Yes, Joe? Yes,
Joe Simonson had an awfully good remark. He said it looked like Whitman had a TV camera somewhere in New York, Manhattan, and looking at all the scenes that passed. I said here that the newspaper is from his newspaper reading.
Television camera and picking out scenes and just sticking them in there. Now, he does more than that. You see, on this haying scene, where is it? He has, or far in the wilds of the mountains, I hunt. And then the Yankee Clipper. Now, where did he find out about that?
Yeah, there's a good answer to that. There's a good answer. And I think those of you who enjoy your newspaper meditations, I think ought to get that. Because, look, a great deal of what Whitman saw of America, he was never there. He saw it in the newspapers. And as they wrote about the West, you see, he got it in his mind. I see you brought up an awfully good point there. In 16. Now, he expresses these things, but he does it like Thoreau and Emerson in a polemic fashion. What is polemic? Like the old newspapers, you know, he expresses these things to shock. I am of old and young, the foolish as much as the wise, regardless of others, ever regardful of others, maternal as well as paternal, stuffed with the stuff that is coarse and stuffed with the stuff that is fine, you see. He just wants to irritate people. Now, just like Thoreau. Now, that was the quality of it, often, you see. A few little notes as you go, and it'll help you get into them. In 19, it has that same quality, and so has 20. This is a meal equally set. This is a meat for natural hunger. It's for the wicked just as well as for the righteous. Now, you see that aggravating quality, polemic quality? And he says towards the end of it, do you think I would astonish? Does the daylight astonish? Does the early red star twittering and so forth? Yes, I know you're astonished, Walt Whitman. Now 20, look at that. Who goes there? Now this is fine. You ought to read this in connection with that letter, and I wish you had the picture of Whitman as he saw himself. And I think there's a woodcut of that in that first edition of Songs Myself. I forget where that is. And it shows Whitman with that old felt hat pushed back a little bit. And his shirt open, you see. And that's that gross, rude. What did he call it? Who goes there? Here it is in 20. Hankering, you see, full of appetites, gross, mystical, nude. How is it I extract strength from the beef I eat, you see? I'm an animal. What is a man anyhow? All I mark as my own, you shall all set as your own. See, I do not snivel, that snivel the world over, that month's vacuums, and you see, he thinks of so many people as just saying trivialities. Why should I pray, whimpering and truckling, fold with powders for invalids? Conformity goes to the fourth removed. I wear my hat as I please. Now, that's one of the badges of the 19th century, at least in America. A man wore his hat, and he took it off just before he went to bed and hung it on his bedstead. And the first thing he did in the morning was put his hat on. And then he stood up and put on his breeches and his shoes. And unless somebody has a feeling for that, you see, so much of the thought of the 19th century, the life, is accessible. It's inaccessible. Now that's in this. I know I'm solid and sound. I won't go through it. I'll just let you go through it. I know I'm deathless. I know I'm august. I exist as I am. Now that's the thing, you see. Who goes there? 22. You see, I resign myself to you. I guess what you mean. I behold from the beach your crooked, inviting fingers. But now there's one thing he doesn't see and see is something that's pretty. And that is carried over to poetry, not right here. But a poem is not something that is pretty. You see, that is a state of culture. A person likes a poem because it's pretty, just like a person would like appliances because they are pretty. form, here or henceforward, it is all the same to me. I accept time absolutely. I accept reality and dare not question it. Materialism first and last imbuing. And there's that old 4th of July feeling, who are all for positive science. And it's also one of the superficialities of the democracy. It depends on whichever way you want it. You can look at it both ways. Walt Whitman, the cosmos, the Manhattan, the sun, turbulent, fleshy, sensual. Now, this is what he would do. Unscrew the locks from the doors. Unscrew the doors themselves from their jams. Whoever degrades another degrades me. Now, I speak the password primeval. I give the sign of democracy. I will accept nothing which all cannot have through all, me. Many long, dumb voices, voices of interminable generations of prisoners of slaves. Now, what he's thinking of here is he would remake history. He would give voices to those who had no voice. And those, you see, in prison, he would open the prison. Now, that's the view that Mark Twain takes of history in the Connecticut Yankee. And it's both those things. It gives him a tremendous power of appeal. The appeal of it is great. And it's almost irresistible. At the same time, he misinterprets history. And one can go through the Connecticut Yankee, you see, and just pick him to pieces. He's vulnerable to criticism. His whole attitude, you see, is historically unsound. But what he's doing, he's carrying this democratic feeling, American feeling, or his feeling, you see, back through history. Now look, there are some of these sense things. In 26, he says, I hear. Now, in other words, his ear is open. I hear bravuras of birds, bustle of growing wheat, gossip of flames. I hear the sound I love, the sound of the human voice. I hear all sounds. Whitman is a different man now for many we have. And in 20. He does that somewhat in 27. In 28, there's the feeling of touch. Is this then a touch, quivering to me to a new identity? Now you see, it's so vast, the world that he is exploring. It's just hard, you can't contain it. Number 30, it's rather poor, I say, but at least it puts into abstract words what we've said in connection with Emerson and the others about logic, you see, and sermons, never convinced. The damp of the night drives deep into my soul. It's the first thoughts, it's the perception that matter, and logic in the mind, in that sense of the word, doesn't mean that much. In 31 is an awfully nice one. It's a sort of a credo. And it's on the commonplace. And you might say he makes poetry of it in this way. I believe a leaf of grass is no less than the journey work of the stars. And the pismire is equally perfect. I've never known exactly what one of those is, but it sounds awfully suggestive. And a grain of sand and the egg of the wren. And the tree toad is what Whitman would call the chef d'oeuvre for the highest. Now this is marvelous. This is almost the equivalent of his title, Leaves of Grass. And the running blackberry would adorn the parlors of heaven. Leaves of grass and that lilac song he associates with Lincoln, and plant that would have been just as good, maybe better. The running blackberry grows in those barren spots and is beautiful and maintains itself. The running blackberry would adorn the parlors of heaven, and also in that you see is that just a common flower. He doesn't need an orchid. Would adorn the parlors of heaven. And the narrowest hinge in my hand puts to scorn all machinery, and the cow, crunching with depressed head, surpasses any statue, and a mouse is miracle enough to stagger sextillions of infidel. And I myself, you see, incorporate nice, cold, long-threaded moss, fruits, grains. You see, he's just chemicals put together. Yes, that's a good one. Now, you see, he takes Emerson, you see, farther in one direction. He will visualize what Emerson doesn't quite visualize. The chemical composition. Says to I could live with animals. Now, 33, I suppose this is a way, is the way he would read and read the newspapers. Space and time, now I see it is true what I guessed at, what I guessed when I loafed on the grass, what I guessed while I lay alone in my bed, and again as I walked the beach. My ties and my ballasts leave me. My elbows rest in sea gaps. I skirt sierras. My palms never cover continents. I am afoot with my vision. Now there he is, you see him in 33, and here is that flight that he takes, you see. I am afoot with my vision. Now there are Edison notes of Whitman's practice, where he practiced control of his senses, and he did something I found that is a person that can do. Now Ruth Benedict is one of the first I remember saying that all sorts of abilities are the individual has faculties, but which one he develops is determined by a good many things. One of the Indian tribes, you see, was Dionysiac,